With soundtracks. I hope you are ready for this talk by JN about hacking a set receiver. We will see some insights into firmware hacking and firmware formats, frame buffers, and peculiarities of the MIPS architecture, and have fun. All right. I have this small device here, a satellite receiver, and it has some connectors here, something for the antenna, for USB, HDMI, another something else, a SCART and a serial port. It's very useful for hacking things, and it has a few buttons, very nice. And if you look inside, you can see there's some flash memory here. You can't really see it in the small picture. And here under the heatsink, there is a quite obscure chip with MIPS CPUs inside. And to find out something about this, I read out the flash memory and looked at it and found this structure here. And there are some names which are readable, AV, CPU, IMG, demo, and something about resource and logo. It's quite interesting already. And there's just a partition table, apparently, where in the flash which data are stored. So I extracted that and looked further, and this is interesting already. Some of that is LZMA compressed, a common compression scheme. And in the middle, there is this JPEG image logo. And this is really the manufacturer logo, but I replaced it, of course. And this partition demo, which was quite high on the list, this is MIPS code if you decompress it and put it into a disassembler. And you can see some initialization, and it's the beginning of the TV application that normally runs on this. And so how do I get my own code into this thing? At first, I wrote the absolute minimum that you can have a halfway useful code, a little loop that prints the letter R to the serial port as often as possible. And this installed this, and after some cursing, because not everything was as I expected, that worked. And I got the letter A over the serial port, which is was very nice to include it there, but it's not very useful, of course, this program. So I wrote another program into the flash memory, which is allows me to peek and poke in the memory and registers of this, of the periphery, the peripherals, to read and write in order to interact with the hardware, really. And the next question is, where is the frame buffer? And from this HDMI port, a picture comes out there, and I would like to influence that. And what helps, of course, is that after starting, this logo is being displayed. So I wrote a little piece of code, which can do a remote control of this monitoring program and looks through the memory, and every 4 kilobytes outputs every first kilobytes. And this is a memory range that looks interesting. There's a lot of nothing, and then a little bit, and then more nothing. And this seems to be similar to the picture of the shark. And if you look closer, you can see the individual lines where it starts and where it ends. And it's, of course, 1,922 bytes long. That is one scan line. And this is really HDMI, 1920 by 1080. And so I thought, well, if I have found the frame buffer, maybe I could shift it and see what happens. And I would expect the shark to move up, but that didn't quite work. Only the color was changed, but not the luminosity. That was quite interesting. In another place, I could change the brightness independently of the color. So we have two frame buffers, one for the color and one for the brightness. And I tried out a bit more, and it turned out that the color space consists of these three components. So it looks like this. So it's YCBCR. It's the luminosity or luma, and color value in blue and bluish and reddish. So that is chroma blue and chroma red signals. And the next thing, of course, is can we put Linux on it? Well, the manufacturer didn't use Linux, but something of its own. So I had to create my own. But yes, Linux can run on this thing. Not really complete, but there's always room for improvement. So how does one port Linux? And the first thing you need is to give Linux the possibility to output something, anything, so you can see what happens. Once for the code that takes the kernel and uncompresses it, and because that's to save space, that is always stored in a compressed form, and so it has to be decompressed. And on the MIPS architecture, it's the component Zboot, and early print K does the same thing, but for the kernel after it has been loaded. And the driver in this place is quite short. It only needs to know how to output one single character. And so that was relatively quick to make.
If you want to run Linux on a MIPS chip, then you have to specify what is this. So what's the name of my chip family, and what can it do? And here, for example, I specified it's a 32-bit little endian MIPS Zboot early print K, as what I mentioned earlier, and then you have to write a couple of methods. What's the name of this device here, and what do I have to do to find where my RAM is located in this device tree here? And interrupts are very important too, if Linux is supposed to run on your device. Here, this chip has its own interrupt controller, which makes the interrupts coming from the different peripheral devices come to the CPU in an ordered way. So you have to write a couple of things like how to demask an interrupt so that it can pass. How can I do the interrupt controller that I'm done and the next interrupt can come in, and then I declare in the device tree on the right hand side where this interrupt controller is located. Here there are two interrupt controllers listed here. The first one is the CPU interrupt controller, which is a standard component of MIPS, and the lower one is one I wrote my own driver for, and those are connected to each other. Well, this didn't really work on first try, so the Linux hung up crashed very early at the place where, at the point where the interrupts are passed to the CPU, so at local IRQ enable, and which was a bit weird. Turns out that in the manual of this specific MIPS processor, which is in this device, MIPS 2504K, it's documented that there is a vectored interrupt mode. If I don't tell my Linux that this mode is supposed to be used, and things go horribly wrong. And so you can just find this out by trying out things and what happens. Next, I want to be able to use my serial port completely. Before, I just had a minimal driver for that can just send characters, but this doesn't really help if I just want to interact with bash and enter commands, things like that. So the Linux system for serial ports and other stuff is for TDYs, for teletypes, that stands for all kinds of terminals. So this Linux subsystem is a bit difficult. So, and has rarely ever been made more modern. So in total, these were 350 lines for some basic functionality necessary for that. For this driver, for the serial port, and at the end it worked out. USB would be nice too. I mean, there are USB ports at the device, and it's a vanilla USB controller built in there in this device called EHCI. So there's which is a spec telling how a USB host controller could look like. Linux has drivers for that, of course, because EHCI is very common, but I wasn't able to get them running. It works a little bit, but it turns out that I plug in a device, but then when it tries to find out what device this is, something stops working, and okay, so here, if you could help me, it would be really appreciated. So if I put my Linux by serial device, this takes very, very long, because this port has a maximum speed of 1 megabaud. 1 million bits per second at the maximum, which at the optimum would take 20 seconds to transfer the whole Linux, but in practice it's a couple of minutes for that. So I would really love to have a debugger, GDB-like. So there is some functionality for that in Linux, so you can GDB or any other kind of debugger, like Visual Studio Code Debugger, if something like this exists, you can connect to that. But this needs even more features in my driver for the serial port. So I haven't implemented that yet. So hacking firmware is very interesting. So far, worlds to discover. And I mean, this device was like 26 euros in total, and porting Linux is just fun. It's for certain values of fun, of course. So, yeah. So I'm done with my stuff. Turns out, any more information for this project, find at GitHub at neuscheffer/m8acs8001, which is the name of the chip that's built in there. And any questions? If please don't.
Okay, thank you very much for the exciting talk. This was a really nice use for this device. Maybe use it to watch TV.
So you can use it to watch TV, but that's boring.
Yeah, I have one question so far. And that is, if you buy devices to hack them, what properties are you looking for, and what could make it seem likely that it can hack, is hackable?
In this device, it's a serial port. It's a very, very useful. That's a very important, a very simple way on hardware level and a software level to get data into a device and out of a device. Also to write interactive software for that. So, and to interact with keyboard and screen.
Is that common to have a serial port?
Not that common, actually. Quite often you have to look at the main board to find something like a serial port, and maybe it doesn't even have any. Something else is this flash chip, this small one here, 4x5mm or something like that. It's a Zeug 8 chip, OIC 8. So it's very good because it's rather easy to connect to them with certain kind of needle card, a connector to read out the flash.
Okay, thank you. That's clear. So let's see if we have some questions in the meantime. No, sorry, there are no more questions. But thank you very much.